my house. I fix your favorite dishes, hoping this good food fills ya. Work my hands.
Welcome to Kitchen Table Talk. This morning, I am your host, Rosanna Longo-Better, and I'm here with Chef Daniel Asher and our guest to talk about food and agriculture this morning. In KGNU, we have in studios Marisa Pulaski, and she runs Folk Farm at Drylands Agroecology Research. We also have Ashore Wyckoff with Yellow Barn Farm, and we have Mark Gottrich with All In Farms. Do you know, Mark, people follow you. They listen to Mark. So welcome to studios today. I'm super happy to have you. And Daniel, thank you for coming. I know it's not so easy sometimes with kids in the morning.
Yes.
You had one of those mornings.
Yes, exactly. But happy to be here. And good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us for Kitchen Table Talk conversation about local food, regenerative agriculture, and beautiful people doing wonderful things.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
I'm feeling just honored to be here and to have this discussion, and was served a beautiful coffee this morning and just curious about how the conversation will go.
Excellent. Good. And Azure?
Yeah, fantastic. It's so funny to hear my own voice on a microphone right now. The first time. So just thank you for inviting us here.
Excellent. And Mark, how are you, my friend? Great to see you.
I'm doing good. I'm really honored to be here. Sorry I couldn't be in studio. We're still busy harvesting in front of the storm coming in, and our farm stand actually opens up today. We're open Thursday through Saturday at the farm, so we're still in distribution mode over here, so I couldn't be there in person, but really honored to be a part of the panel, and enjoyed your food very much at the Soil Farm dinner, Daniel, the other week. It was impeccable, and great to be part of the conversation.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was wonderful to see you there. What an amazing event. Yeah, great shout out to Soil and the incredible work they're doing incredible work in the fields and in the soil. So, awesome. Well, good. I guess the best thing to do would be to have each of you briefly talk about what kind of work that you're doing. Like Marissa at Drylands Agroecology, you guys are doing some incredible stuff. I actually watched a video that you guys put together. Anthony Aww. Mint sent it to me from Zero Foodprint. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty incredible to see what you've put together and your strategy for dealing with the challenging area that we're in as far as, you know, water access and growing region and trying to extend growing seasons. So can you talk a little bit about the work that you do and what brings you joy working with the soil?
Sure. Thank you for the question and invitation. So we are working to transform dry, barren landscapes into lush ecosystems where humans, animals, and spirit thrive. And so much of our work is centered around understanding how to create these patterns with no supplemental irrigation. So really the work emerged, I have to give a shout out to my beloved Nick DiDomenico when he first landed at Elk Run Farm, where we have a 40-foot well that often goes dry. So sometimes we'll wake up in the morning and there's no drinking water, there's no shower water, thus no ability to irrigate. And I thank Creator for that every day, because Nick has been able to channel, and through his different teachers, of course, understand how to begin to not only save drought-tolerant seeds, so we have corn, beans, sorghum, amaranth, that actually this season they didn't get any water past June. And then wow. on top of that, really his passion is in creating food forests. So a lot of fruit trees, and these trees are planted usually like 1,000 to 6,000 at a time. And they're watered once upon planting, and that's it. So
wow.
we call it the stun method, sheer total utter neglect. that doesn't actually come from us directly.
Right.
But when you allow a plant to find its way without any water, you're creating very, very strong crops that can continue breeding.
That are deeply resilient.
Exactly.
And very self-sufficient.
Exactly. And that's where my work comes in. So I'm the co-executive director, but my passion lies in cultural advocacy and education. So how can we actually not only raise and breed these crops, but take them to places across the globe that are in need, maybe desertified landscapes, food deserts.
Right.
Just really responding to food scarcity.
Yes, that's fantastic. I think being in the mindset of adapting to your environment and finding things that can flow in a ecosystem that might be more challenging than others is a consciousness that I think everyone needs to evolve into and step away from this kind of precious lawn mentality where everyone wants to have tons of access to water to be able to have this beautiful, lush landscape at home where it might not be appropriate to have that at all. And that's where things like xeriscaping and things like, you know, intelligent permaculture come in, where you're adapting to the environment around you, not forcing what you want to see in a space where it may not belong or want to be.
Right. Yeah, and that makes me think of wild weeds. It makes me think of the reemergence of culture when we're yes. when we're dropping into the mystery. And I am a huge fan of wild weeds, and I'm curious if you ever cook with them. But, you know, they're some of the most nutrient-dense food that we can eat,
yes.
vegetable-wise. So
and deeply misunderstood.
Yep, yep.
So. And Azure, can you please talk about, you know, I pass Yellow Barn Farm a couple times a day going to Longmont. I've been so attracted to the pull of what you are doing there. You have that beautiful indigenous plot in the front. I've watched harvests unfold. I totally missed the Hanuman Festival that you guys hosted. You just had a shindig on Saturday.
Yep.
So I am so excited to hear what you've got. I've heard about you through multiple people many times. I've just never actually set foot on your land. And I apologize because it's so close. I'm right up Left Hand Canyon up in Jamestown.
Yeah, you got to come by sometime.
So tell us about you and what you do and what brings you joy.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Well, maybe I should give a little bit of context about the Yellow Barn, because if you're from Colorado, you've probably driven by it. And it is very much an iconic landmark on your way out towards Lyons and Longmont.
Yes.
But it actually used to be a big horseback riding facility called Autumn Hill back in the day. And my parents actually became the stewards of that land about 20 years ago.
Wow.
And me and my sister actually grew up riding horses there. And, you know, I was fast friends with the goats and really got to be a kid on the land. And it was just absolutely incredible. And
that's
then
great.
Over time ended up actually moving away, really actually ran as far away from Boulder as possible, ended up in China, then finally landed in Boston.
Wow.
And really got my start in just learning about entrepreneurship and really about logistics and operations from working in a moving company and really growing this entity from the ground up with my business partner, Charles. And after COVID hit, I felt really called to come back to the land and just get out of the city and be more connected with our food and the soil and really my own roots and community, and moved back to Boulder in 2020. And got introduced to Nick and Marissa, and we have kind of been sprinting for the last 2 years of getting this whole property completely transformed. It had really sat fallow for the last 5 years as we were really trying to sell the property. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, couldn't find the right buyers, just really couldn't find the right people to take over. And then when we got connected with Nick and Marissa and Drylands Agroecology Research, we really saw what the whole property could be. And they were talking about the silvopastures and the animal rotations. And I had just seen Kiss the Ground and my whole mind had been blown. And I was like, oh, my God.
Such a good documentary. This. Yes, please watch it.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, I have to put myself in here because I have witnessed these goddesses of the land bringing amazing community together. Just like I have seen, you know, I have witnessed also Kenna there in Olin Farm doing amazing bringing community, because, you know, I love going out there and doing reports, and I have been so surprised. And when I think about the people that are our local farmers here, my heart melts, because I know that you're doing the hard work, you know.
The hardest work.
Yeah, the hardest. You know, nurturing others. This is, it's really huge.
Yes.
And through these years, I have seen how they have come together, and also with the leadership that Mark brings to the table.
Yeah.
Because you speak the truth. I still remember doing a beautiful podcast and using the sounds of Olin Farm and really understanding that you guys need to stand strong in front of the reality that is huge farms, monoculture, a lot of pesticides.
That's what got us into this mess.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of food around the United States.
Yes.
But the big stand that the locals are doing here is huge, and they need to be supported. So it is, for me, a pleasure to be able to bring you together to this table. And That's it. That's all I'm saying.
Completely.
Por favor.
No, gracias por todo, Rosana. Muchas gracias. You know, es perfectamente.
Take it on. Take it. You take it.
Excellent. And Mark, please tell us, I mean, you've created such an amazing hub of community and food and a gathering space. Please tell us about you and your work and, again, what your passion is.
Thanks so much. And, yeah, so this was the 15th anniversary of Olin Farms, like Azure.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Woohoo. Woo. I grew up on this farm, like Azure grew up on her farm, and like her, I wanted to get the heck out of here and was in Dallas and had a place to travel, a chance to travel for a long time. And the land called me back. I came back to take care of my grandma Lee, who was still living here. And that's when Ken and I moved back here and started our family. And that was 17 years ago. And after 2 years of just having gardens and getting animals again, we realized that we really wanted to provide nutrient-dense food to the community. It wasn't just about feeding the family. And that's when we started Olin Farms as a business. So this is our 15th year. And it's one of our goals is try to prove the economic viability of agriculture. And it's still a challenge. Every farm I know is struggling economically, no matter what they're growing. And to try to find models that really work has been our goal and our passion, and always really focusing on getting nutrient dense food into the community. So this year we grew our, and we've been in kind of a 2 or 3 year transition since the pandemic as well. I appreciate you using the word hub, because that's really what we're trying to build out here is our own little food hub. Mm-hmm. We don't go to the farmers markets anymore. We used to do 5 farmers markets a week in 2019.
Wow.
We really brought everything back home to the farm, really grew our CSA here, and started partnering with other farms. There's about 15 other local family farms around Colorado that also distribute their food through our CSA and through our farm stand, and really trying to make it a hub of food distribution. So this year was our biggest CSA ever. It was also our biggest food access programs ever, thanks to partnerships with Boulder County Health and Sister Carmen's. Mm-hmm. We had a big chunk of our produce going to needy families that are families in need. And it's just a growing passion of ours, is this healthy, nutrient-dense food needs to be available to everybody. And then lastly, we had the most amount of visitors ever to the farm in form of Kenna's education programs. And I appreciate saying Elk Run and Yellow Barn are run by goddesses in some way. And Olin Farms is the exact same way. Like, our community aspect wouldn't be the same without Kenna. And that comes down to this masculine, feminine energy. And our food system has been dominated by this masculine, dominant, kill, maximum production, who cares about quality or environment. And so what we need now is like this return of this feminine energy, just actually caring, restoring, regenerating. And so through our youth education programs, through field trips, through like corporate team builds where people come out and we're teaching them how we're building soil, like everybody we're talking to, this is the same narrative. It's like, you know, right now we're losing a little bit of our topsoil every year on Earth. And some scientists look at that and said, we only have 60 or 70 years of harvest left at these rates. And what regenerative agriculture is about, what carbon farming is all about at the end of the day, is physically growing new topsoil. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've been experimenting with for the last 3 or 4 years in a lot of different ways. And there's ways to do it and mimic nature, like rotationally grazing of animals is probably the most economical way to grow new topsoil. But I like to geek out on like, what's the fastest way to grow new topsoil? And what that has looked like for us is finding a lot of high carbon waste streams from around the farm and around the community that could end up at the landfill, and instead bringing them back. So we're putting things like, we're making our own compost out of our sheep and manure from our sheep and chickens, and mixing that with leaves from local landscapers, and doing our own on-farm composting, partner with EcoCycle to have an aerated system so we don't have to go out there and turn it all the time. So when we're building soil, we're doing these mulching projects underneath our perennials, same kind of perennial stuff that's going on at Elk Run and Yellow Barn. Like, we have to perennialize agriculture. So over the last 3 or 4 years, we put in 9,000 linear feet of hedgerows and windbreaks within our vegetable fields. And so what we're doing now is we're going back and always mulching those things with our homemade compost. And then we get mushroom blocks from like spent mushroom waste from local mushroom farms, like Zach at Boulder Mushrooms has been a great partner with, and we've been able to work into grants where we can actually buy his spent mushroom bags, or after a mushroom farmer fruits his mushrooms a few times, that bag's kind of a waste product, and the worst case scenario ends up going to the landfill, but the mycelium is still alive. we bring it back to the farm, get it in the perennial lines, top it off with a bunch of wood chips or another waste product that could end up at the landfill from local tree companies, but instead we're getting them delivered to the farm and getting all these waste products and just stacking them in these systems. And eventually all that stuff turns to soil. And then, and some of our experiments down by the creek where it's a little more humid and we're doing these same systems, we've seen like six inches to a foot of topsoil can be grown within 1 year. But it's a lot of material, it's a lot of material management getting that stuff out into the area. We rely on Wildlands Restoration Volunteers has been out. They have a great regenerative ag program where we host about six to eight volunteer days in the spring and another time in the fall, and using big groups of like 30 volunteers at a time to get all that stuff out into the field and to grow that soil and get those perennials planted. So that's been a passion for us. We've got a lot of stuff going on at the farm. It's a lot to manage, and it's but it's a lot of fun, and we're excited to be doing it.
Jeez, Mark, amen, brother.
Yes.
That is profound, incredible. And I deeply appreciate you referencing, you know, masculine versus feminine energy, you know, in invoking the divine feminine energy and this sacred idea of honoring and respecting the land. I think is, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, I look at what's happened to our agricultural system in many ways. When you look at this male-driven, I look at it as extraction and depletion versus respecting, honoring, and nourishing. And I think, you know, we obviously see where which direction takes us and where we need to go. Rosanna, you wanted to?
You know, make sure that I also let our listeners know that when we have these kitchen table talks,
oh, call in.
Open our mics,
yes,
and our phone lines, and for those that want to call us and ask questions. And ask questions to these amazing guests that we have this morning,
yes,
with us. You know, it's just so profound. So I want to give away the phone number. Please call us at 303-442-4242. Again, 303-442-4242. And ask any question. Now that we have this amount of knowledge about soil restoration, local farming, composting, there's so many things. I remember being first at the Yellow Barn Farm, and you were doing, you was just arrived, and you were mobilizing this composting project. And we planted tons of trees that I always, when I drive, I'm like, oh, they're growing. How's that going? Tell us.
That's been amazing. Yeah, that was actually our very first community event when after I moved back. Nick gave us the task of planting about 3,500 trees at the Yellow Barn and said that it was probably going to take over the course of a week and maybe we'd get some volunteers to come out to help us plant the majority. And I was like, we got to do this on a weekend. We're not going to be able to have enough time.
3,500?
Yeah, 3,500 trees. And yeah, we managed to have 175 people come out over the course of a weekend, and we planted every single tree in 2 days. And they're thriving. And like what Marissa said, I've actually heard that that phrase stun has actually turned from sheer total utter neglect to strategic utter neglect of letting some die. But that was really the intention of it, of planting all these trees and then seeing which ones actually made it and not coddling them. And so making sure that the ones that could thrive were resistant to the amount of weather and the dryness that we were dealing with in this climate. And then the following year, we only had about 400 of that 3,500 trees need to be replanted, which was pretty profound.
Wow.
So we did a big peace planting in the spring with Peace Jam and then DAR, and these trees are thriving. We now have cattle in rotation. If you've driven past the farm, you've seen those,
yes,
little Oreo cows out
there. That's awesome.
They're pretty cute. And yeah, we had our composting program get up and running. We had about 150 buckets donated from Home Depot that first year.
That's
and
great.
And we have just a community-supported composting where we collect food waste and we bring it back. We feed it to the pigs. They create good soil. We produce from that. And we're really creating all of these full circle systems, which have been just absolutely amazing. And kind of similar to what Mark was just saying, we've also been working with EcoCycle and Compost Colorado, actually, to really create a robust composting station at Yellow Barn that can really be a demonstration site and taking in all these waste products. There's so many areas that are just putting a lot of material into landfills that actually could be upcycled into something really incredibly useful. and Vital for a Farm. And a lot of the projects and organizations that we work with, like Luscious Lands and Drylands Agroecology Research, need compost for the big swale projects that they're doing or the gardens that we're working on. And having compost as a material that can be used is just absolutely integral to a farm system.
Huge and epic. And I know Hardy had spoken from Metacarbon. Mm. We had him on as a guest last month, and he spoke so highly about how you have been so collaborative and helpful with the work that they're doing as well on their farm. And I think, you know, creating this discussion about the cycle of how things need to go, I think as humans, we live in these equations that are triangles and squares and are completely nonsensical and have points that don't connect properly. Whereas you look at a circle and it's smooth and it's beautiful and it flows perfectly. And I think living in this, you know, circular concept of how one thing can support the next thing in the cycle and it swings back around is deeply necessary. And let's talk a little bit, I think, about perennials. I think that's important for people to connect with what the idea is of growing perennials, utilizing perennials. If each of you can talk a little bit about what cover cropping is, the importance of things, you know, that are a part of a highly functioning ecosystem, holistic land management. You know, Mark, you mentioned rotational grazing of cattle. I think it's very important for people to understand how each part of a working farm connects. You know, why is it not just about growing vegetables, but why are animals necessary and essential to integrate into that model? And how helpful the whole connection works as a stream of consciousness and evolution.
Beautiful question. Yeah, I just want to honor you, Mark, in this moment, and thinking about Kenna, too. I just feel so thankful for who you are and how you are, and just feels important to name that because you're holding something like a pillar for us young farmers who are learning, you know, over and over again. And so I would love to pass off the kind of science base to you in a moment, but I would love to speak to the spirit of how I see holistic design because that's what resonates with me. And I love that you're speaking to this circle. For me, what's been up a lot lately is how do we begin any project? And what I see in our society is often we're working from our minds and we're working with only humans. So remembering the heavens and the sky and the earth and our place in between those two.
Yes.
So what I want to speak to is the importance of offering to the land and asking the land for permission before we talk about perennials, before we talk about rotational grazing. You know, I believe that through prayer and through intention, everything can come to be in a good way. So I want to invoke that, especially for more people who are coming back to the land and wanting to grow their food and wanting to be in relationship, ask for permission and really acknowledge that this earth just keeps giving and giving and giving. And then from there, it's almost like the patterning and the designs just come to you because spirit speaks to you.
Yes.
And the earth speaks to you. And of course, on a logistical level, there's our goals and there's the needs of the landscape, right?
Right.
So that's another tool that I often use within communities or, you know, upon going to any barren landscape. You offer, you ask, and then you ask the community, what are your needs? What are your goals? What are you looking to be in relationship with within this ecosystem?
Right.
And then the other side of that is actually tracking the patterns of the landscape and observing and seeing what's available right there and then. So the human goals and the needs of the ecosystem create the beauty of a design. And I would love to pass it to you, Mark, to talk a little bit about perennials and just the...
That's fantastic.
The basics. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for defining that so poetically. I think we exist in a mindset of whatever we need, we take.
Yeah.
And we just assume that it's this kind of transactional relationship with Mother Earth, but it's not at all. the planet is a living, beautiful, sacred organism that we need to communicate with. Mm-hmm. And we lose that through these terrible supercomputers we carry in our pockets and our obsessive need to be so hyper-connected we're completely disconnected. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for centering the conversation and bringing it to that as a core, because that is the essence of growing, is to honor and to ask and then to open your arms and receive, as opposed to demand and to take.
Yes, and I just want to respond briefly to that, because another thing I'll name what I'm seeing in our community is everyone wants to farm, everyone wants to buy land and, you know, find ways to create food. And simultaneously, our meat shares, for example, talk about cover cropping, regenerative ag, rotational grazing.
Right.
All of that is also so that we have meat that we can eat. Well-loved animals, well-taken care of animals.
Yes.
And then you put that out to the public, and it's a total strain to get people to want a beef or pork share.
Really?
But there's a line of people in Whole Foods. So I just want to name that, that I really hope that we can be in integrity with what we're saying we want as a community.
Yes.
And as a culture, and the importance of actually supporting your local farmers.
Yeah.
And part of that, yes, is understanding regenerative agriculture and understanding the patterns and understanding how we can encourage the earth to restore. But also, let's walk our talk.
Yeah.
You know, support your farmers.
Yes.
I just have to say that. In this moment.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's great. Wow. This is beautiful energy in the studio right now. It's powerful and potent. Mark, can you please speak to this wonderful line of dialogue?
Absolutely. And I'm happy to get into some science. But before that, I have to agree 100% with Marissa that at the end of the day, we need farmers to heal land. And the only way we're going to have farmers healing land is if the community supports those farmers all the time. It's hard enough way to make a living. It's a lot of us are doing almost a community service in a way to keep pushing these things out and making things available. But it's an extremely difficult way to make a living. And if Boulder County cares and cares, they got to get out and come out to the farm stands, come out directly to the farms, buy CSA shares. And there is a demand there. And most importantly, too, if you are going to go out to eat, find a restaurant that's sourcing local like Daniel's. Find ways to make sure that you're eating local. Like, there's just too many people mindlessly eating tortured animals, period. Mm-hmm. And I've been guilty of that too. You go to a restaurant and you're eating something that, like, I was ordering the chicken wings again, but you have no idea the pain and suffering that freaking chicken went through, mm-hmm. compared to a chicken that is being raised on Yellow Barn Farm or Elk Run or Olin Farms, where they're just like happy chickens living natural lives. Mm-hmm. And we have to honor that. If we're going to embrace the feminine and embrace that, we have to walk the walk, and that's for everybody. And that's the only way we're going to have farmers healing land is if the community gets out and supports them, it supports farm dinners, supports local restaurants. We have our last farm dinner coming up in November, next Saturday, the 12th at La Vida Bella. It's kind of downtown Longmont celebration. People can learn about that on Olin Farms and come out and see what a community meal is really all about when you're eating all local ingredients. It's awesome. And so having said that, let's get back to the soil health principles. What we talked about, perennials are a big piece. So NRCS for years, National Resource Conservation Service, has really been kind of pushing. There's five principles of soil health that kind of encompass a holistic approach, what we need to do to grow topsoil and have regenerative agriculture. And perennials is a big piece, because one of those is keep a living root in the soil. If there's a living root in the soil, you can be photosynthesizing, you can be putting energy into the soil, you can keep that soil from blowing away. The second is biodiversity. And this is where industrial agriculture is hurt. And there's just too many large-scale monocultures. And nature doesn't have monocultures. Nature thrives on biodiversity of plants, bacteria in the soil, fungi in the soil. So that's what a lot of our small regenerative farms are doing, is like they have animals, they have pollinator habitat, they have vegetables, they have all this biodiversity going. The third is cover and keep your soil covered and have an armor on the soil. And that's what we know here. Our winters are getting dry and windy and just brutal. If you have soil exposed, you're losing it. So that's why perennials are so great, because it helps provide a cover, or mulch or compost or anything. Get something on to cover that soil. another principle is don't do disturbance. And that's where a veggie farmer like me is probably the most guilty. It's like, we have to go out and till our beds to grow veggies at the scale we're doing. And we know, and every time you till the soil, you're hitting the reset button on that ecosystem. And then you have to go back and put compost or put biochar, or put inoculants and go back and do drenches to build that ecosystem back. It's really labor intensive. Nature doesn't hit the reset button like that. So don't disturb the soil.
Don't disturb the soil. Mark with Olin Farm. I need to just do the ID announcement here. You are listening to KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver. And we have a call. There's so much knowledge that you are giving us, but let's listen from our first call this morning. Hello, are you there?
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. This is David Adamson with the Goose Creek Community Land Trust. I called in last time about how can we help promote, attainable housing for agricultural workers. And I want to ask you guys to reflect a little bit, and maybe some other callers will call in, about the central issue of land ownership. And first, just recognize you guys are such heroes and pioneers,
yes,
of taking back and combining the land and business, which shouldn't be about busyness. it starts with the prayer you just talked about, and Aldo Leopold, the Forest Service employee who was the father of wilderness, said when we understand land as a community, we can begin to treat it with love and respect. And I think that's what we've forgotten, as you're talking about. But hey, we're part of this community. And that's the Native American tradition that you're honoring, of starting with a love and prayer and recognition. So thank you so much for that. And I want to just point out two sources of information that maybe you know about and maybe you don't, and then I'll go off the line. But I want to highlight Arlo Linkletter's incredible book, Owning the Earth, which is a history of land tenure in a lot of countries, not every country, but he just so brilliantly pinpoints that our version of land tenure, which is exclusive and which gives most of the rights to the landowner, no matter what other community or human or non-human demands are on that land, the owner in fee, in our version, which just came over from England in a very specific time, which I could go into, but I think some people are familiar with the enclosure laws and pushing peasants, having traditional use of agricultural lands in England. They were pushed off as the beginning of capitalism arose, which is mostly about making carpets and using sheep to grow wool, to make carpets in the Netherlands, and London merchants and landowners got a hold of this idea, improving the soil with sheep manure and just pushing the peasants off. So that was the beginning of a homelessness. I mean, one other thing. So all of Leopold, and then to go fast forward to the U.S. and all of our problems are well diagnosed by Henry George in his 1869 book, and he was the most famous intellectual. In America, the game Monopoly was an effort to spread his ideas. Unfortunately, went to doing the opposite and glorifying Monopoly. But he answers the question, why in America, such a dynamic and rich place, does poverty deepen and persist and deepen?
What was his book?
The way we allow a ever smaller number of people to own what is all of our common heritage, the land. Including other species and future generations, the land, the biota, the quality of the air and the water, the stability of the climate, etc. We all own that. And that's what we've forgotten. And whether it's police brutality or income inequality or climate change or the difficulties of doing what you're doing, the land is all of our heritage. So I'll take it offline.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you
so much for bringing all these topics to the table, to the Kitchen Table Talk today. Please, Chef Asher, take it on.
I thank you for bringing that up. I think the drive of ownership is very much ego driven. And I think that idea of where the ego takes us is the complete opposite of where the spirit takes us. And I think when you think of the idea of land, I'd love to hear what you're doing with that specific indigenous area that you have designated. Is that through what you guys have done on Yellow Barn Farm? I can't slow down to read the whole banner, but I see some of it, and I've looked up online. If you can please talk about, what you're doing when we talk about this idea of indigenous land and, you know, taking this knowledge that rests in the soil, that we have, as a society, done horrible, unspeakable things with, and to the humans that have created this amazing base of wisdom, bringing that back. And Mark, I'd like to, that soil dinner was amazing, and the invocation that was spoken before to honor the land upon which the dinner was taking place on, and the land that created the organisms that enabled the food to even exist, that our team had the honor of preparing and cooking and serving. So speaking to this idea of indigenous knowledge keeping and passing along ancient traditions, if you can speak to that.
For the audience, I'll just name. So Drylands Agroecology Research has done all the master planning and regenerative design for Yellow Barn Farm. And Ajre actually works as our operations director, and then also has such a beautiful skill within regenerative economics. And maybe we can circle back on that later. But one of my roles within the organization, as we continue to be greeted with so many landscapes to design, is to make sure that there's equity and to make sure that there's opportunity for those who are underrepresented to have space to work the land and to reemerge and remember their culture. And so that's how the Indigenous Foods Garden came to be. As Nick was beginning to design the Yellow Barn Farm, he found there's actually a lot of acreage there that we want to save for market gardening. And so we started rotating our pigs and chickens, cover cropping, prepping the soil for an ability to grow food. And I just came in and made sure that that particular plot could be used for community members who are in need and who want to remember ways of tending to land. So sure. That garden is completely indigenous led, and we've been able to get a good amount of grant funding. So it's in collaboration with Harvest of All First Nations. And essentially, we have been working since March to bring in community members, a lot from Denver, Longmont, Boulder, with stipends. So there's a $50 stipend per family, and then gas is covered, and you come and you volunteer for 3 days. And it's just an opportunity for people to work with the landscape, and then also to take home fresh food. You know, we had Native youth coming in. I'll never forget this one fella. I think he was probably like 16 or 17. And he had come a few times. We planted buckwheat together. I should name, too, it's called an Indigenous Foods Garden because I just asked the community, hey, what do y'all want to grow? And that was corn, beans, amaranth, Layer Farms. I have to give them a shout out. They gave us many peppers and eggplants and tomatillos. And, you know, a lot of the community that we're working with are Aztec and Mexica people. So they wanted to make their salsas, and I'll go into the corn festival soon.
Wow.
But essentially this one kid, the beans were finally starting to grow. And he's like, Marissa, like, what is that? I'm like, that's a bean. He's like, a what? And I'm like, a black bean. He's like, you mean my black bean burrito? And I'm like, yeah, man, that's where you get the beans
that's
from.
That's what it looks like, right.
So just seeing people, like, totally open up to the reality of where their food comes from, you know? So really that garden is a prayer to create opportunity and to really bring back food sovereignty in a way where soon these folks can just go on and understand the patterns of creating opportunities for food to grow. And it seems to be working. And again, a lot of the focus was in relationship to the Harvest of All First Nations Corn Festival. So I think we served over 150 families like tons of food. But then on top of that, we have lots of different seeds saved from Hopi Reservation through Spirit of the Sun, all different types of corn that are kind of passed down through different lineages of First Nations folks. So it's hard to put into a short phrase.
So many things. But the beautiful thing is to see you coming together and being united. That's what I love. Chef Asher, local restaurants, they also have a community like the farmers, the local farmers here.
Yes,
I'm wondering,
very much
so. Because you got to support each other. This is not an easy job.
It's, you know what, it's not. And it takes work and it takes devotion. And, you know, I guess I want to ask all three of you, are you guys delivering your produce by Amazon drone? Is that, are you guys, oh, you're not doing that? Oh, so people have to actually do an inconvenient act to come to you to receive? Wow, that's challenging. So there's not an instant gratification button that someone can just hit and get, you know, beautiful, local, regenerative food delivered to their doorstep? They actually have to act intentionally? Is that what we're talking about?
Actually, I think that's actually been a big cornerstone of what we're trying to do at Yellow Barn, is to create a distribution network on a local level that can get this fresh, beautiful, regeneratively grown produce directly to your doorstep and make it economical.
Right.
And this is actually something we've done through our compost program, where everyone who signed up for that monthly membership, we're doing a weekly bucket swap. So that allows us to create a distribution network where we're able to deliver eggs and microgreens and fresh produce and meat and everything we're producing directly to your doorstep while also picking up your food waste.
Right.
So I think a little bit of what Marissa was mentioning with like the regenerative economics, I think I should maybe note that I don't know that I can really take the title of a farmer. I'm more of a people tender, and I really tried to come into this acknowledging that that's not my skill set, and I have wanted to partner with people who bring that to the table, and that my skill set's more in organization and people management and logistics and operations and a lot of the things that the farmers don't really want to deal with.
Correct.
And trying to really re-envision the way that we're looking at farming, that this is really holistic, and that means that the people and the skill sets that we have also need to be holistic.
Right.
And fitting each of these little puzzle pieces together so that everyone can actually start to do what they really thrive in. And I really do think of people almost the same way as you think of plants. You know, we're creating this social soil, which to me is really about trust and communication and planting people in that. And you really can't plant people that can thrive unless you have healthy soil. And that,
yes,
really does take time to build. And these systems that we're designing, you know, they are very much integral with the land and the people and the enterprise that goes behind it. And that people can't tend the land unless there is an economic resource coming through.
Sure.
And really starting to shift the way that we view money. You know, I think a lot of us have a very damaged relationship with money just because we've seen how extractive and depleting it can,
yes,
be. But if you really start to re-envision the way that we view this topic, it's really a beautiful tool that's almost like water in an ecosystem. So how can you get that water to flow in the right ways and get each little plant that has been planted in this healthy social soil the right amount that they need to thrive, and giving them the resources to really be healthy and whole? And it's just been really beautiful to see that that's really what Yellow Barn is becoming a demonstration of, is having all of these little micro nodes within a macro system that are all interconnected and supporting each other. And so a lot of what I try to focus on is, you know, what are these links? How can we, you know, employ someone across the board of three different organizations so that they have multiple income streams and there's more resilience in the way that they're employed, that if one of those businesses doesn't do as well one year, they're not completely reliant on that source of income, that they can actually have multiple levels of income coming in that's allowing them to specialize in the things that they enjoy doing, as well as starting to hone the gifts that they have, so that you really can see people thrive. Because when people are happy, they'll truly self-manage because they care about what they're doing.
And it feels good.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So just giving people space to really be their own individual, really defining their own path with the support and resources and the ability. I mean, we've really talked about Yellow Barn being a summer camp all day, every day for all ages.
Right.
Really come here and experience and understand what you're good at and what you like doing, and how do we get you into that role and craft something around you.
That's fantastic. I think, you know, finding a way to give access in a way that feels more intentional and intimate than this highly removed process of convenient delivery is super important. You know, I've seen a lot of, you know, programs attempting to utilize a logistics model of infrastructure to plug in a bunch of different farms and have them as a collaborative delivery service. I haven't seen that work successfully yet. And I would love to. I've seen a couple companies show up with that intention, and for whatever reason, it just didn't reach fruition or wasn't scalable in a way that made viable economic sense for all parties involved. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to bring up the fact that if this doesn't lead to some form of positive revenue and profitability, then the circle collapses. So I think it's important to define, I love that phrase, regenerative economics, you know, and I'd love to ask, you know, you specifically, Mark, because, you know, you've got it so dialed in at this point. You know, I just want to know what do you find have been your most successful crops, if I can use that word, as not only thriving and vibrant in our current bioregion, but successful as far as giving you a financial return based on what you've put in?
That's a great question. And I think I like to say the day of the family farm is a thing in the history. Like, there's just too much that a regenerative farm needs to hold down, and for, in terms of growing food, in terms of grant writing, in terms of organization, people management, that one family can't just hold that down. So I really look at Olin Farms and really encourage other people to look at the idea of having community farms, where it really takes a community to hold that space down and do it properly. And I definitely wouldn't say we even have it dialed in. Like, we're still struggling year to year, trying to find ways to stay viable. And but part of that is because we spend a lot of time investing in our favorite crop, which is really the youth. Like, we had a bunch of kids who grew up here coming to summer classes all through the youth. And then when they got too old to work at the summer class, to come to the summer classes, we started a high school internship program and paid them to come to the farm and be part of the CSA harvest and wash and distribution. So this summer we had 12 high schoolers working at the farm, all part-time, but that was 12 new people on the payroll.
That's fantastic. Well,
the payroll, and it was, and so those kind of things, but we see a lot of them was their first job ever. Like, 80% of them, it was their very first job. And so there's a lot of coaching, a lot of expectation setting. And it's thanks to Jimena, my daughter, and Paul and our crew in their mid-20s that coach and lead those kids and motivate them. And they all show up on time. Like, they're great, responsible kids if they're given something to believe in and something to work toward. And but at the end of the day, like, we really need to find like grants to be able, or donations to be able to support those kids coming to the farm, because it's a lot for the farm to carry that investment into the future all the time. So it's still something we're balancing and finding ways to fund that more responsibly. But that's what's going to, the labor crunch is so big. And the caller, he mentioned one quick thing at the very beginning that was about like interested about housing for ag labor. Like, that's the actual boots on the ground to grow food for our community is being held up big time right now. It used to be about water. Now it's about labor. There's just not enough farm labor to get all the stuff picked for the CSAs, distributed to the school districts. I mean, there's all these systems in place, but it's just too expensive to live in Boulder County now. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to find ways to have people living on the farm, and you're going around all those land use regulations and ridiculousness. And it's just, there's not enough great labor pools to really push it forward. So that's a piece of it. Like, how do we make the community be part of the farm? And that's sometimes high school kids being able to live at home with their parents and not have to worry about those ridiculous rents, make them a great employee for 3 or 4 years, but we're constantly training new ones. And so that community aspect, how can people get involved? Like, we do work shares, CSAs, where a mechanic comes and does mechanical things. A landscaper comes and helps us keep up with mowing and trimming and things like that. Tree companies come and help us with tree work and trade for CSA shares and farm dinners. And like that kind of collaborative model where anybody can bring a skill set to a farm. And that's in order for these regenerative, community-based, educational, really focused on nutrient density and medicinal food to the community, it's going to take a community of people supporting that farm. Maybe it's just buying their product, showing up every week to buy it. Maybe it's going online, finding a way to make a donation. I think all of our farms take donations online as well and can be supported directly that way as well. Or it could be just finding a way to come volunteer your time and bring that specific skill set that maybe the farm is looking for. The only way you're going to know what that is visit the farm, get involved, and find out how can we support these farms more as a community effort, because there's a lot of young farmers, great passion in this county right now, but they're all super staying super small intentionally, because scaling is just like an economic disaster. We're still trying to ride that out with having 20 employees and still being a seasonal employer. And it's a lot to juggle and manage. And so it's, we have to find new innovative ways to really look at how to keep these farms economically viable and the boots on the ground, whether it's through volunteers or paid internships or employment. How do we get the kids are ready? The youth are so ready to grow healthy food and grow healthy soil. And we have amazing farmers ready to put the tools in their hands and get it going. But how can we make that more efficient? How can the county step up? Instead of all the youth corps going to county parks and open space trails, bring them on to county open space agriculture and get these kids out of the county.
Yes.
Here and knocking out projects.
That's great.
The county's looking for ways to do it. We can all advocate for that. The county has the funding to do a lot of these projects if they directed it in a strategic way.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that. Land use regulations is huge. And, you know, Hardy spoke to that, how frustrating it is that legally you have this, you know, amazing space where you can park a few trailers or get creative with, you know, a yurt or teepee system or something that connects to the land. Mm-hmm. And theoretically, that's illegal land use.
Yep.
And that's crazy. So, Mark, thank you for bringing that up. I mean, hands are needed in the soil to make this entire idea flow and function properly. And it's becoming harder and harder to find folks that are able to do that in a way that flows with where they are at and what they're able to manage to just show up and do an honest day's work. And seeing this high school model is fascinating and fantastic. And I agree that the county needs to set this up in a very assertive way so that there's a consistent funnel of happy, healthy, vibrant humans that are connecting with the power of farming.
Profound conversation that you guys are having. I just want to make sure that I also announce that we are getting calls this morning. So please call us at 303-442-4242. 303-442-4242. Call us. Are you there? Okay, excellent. Do you have a question?
Oh, yeah, it's very faint.
We hear you very low, but if you have a question, that will be great before we close the show today.
I don't know what's wrong with the telephone. It's still ringing or something. But anyway, I hope you can hear me. I need telephone numbers for Yellow Barn Farm.
Oh, telephone numbers.
And also Olin Farms.
Olin Farms, excellent.
I'm not able to hear it unless I thought I heard something about pork share.
Yes.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's
Thank
great.
Thank you so much. So
you know what? Yeah.
You put out the question. I'm going to let them answer.
We have a couple minutes left. Yeah, yes. I'd love for each of you to give a contact info, website, phone number, etc., and a closing thought from each of you would be great. I'm sorry it went so fast. I'm completely overwhelmed. I'm like scribbling furiously. This has been unbelievable. So I just want to thank you all. I'm profoundly moved by the conversation today, and we need another 3 hours to even, you know, let it naturally flow where it's begun. But Mark, if you want to start with, thank you for bringing that up to the caller. Mark, best way to contact you guys and have access to your beautiful land and farm stand?
Yep, our farm stand for the next 3 weekends. We're still open Thursday and Friday are noon to 5, and Saturday is 10 to 2, all the way up until the Saturday before Thanksgiving. We do have some winter markets planned, one a festival here at the farm the first Saturday in December, then one at the Left Hand Grange, one at La Vida Bella the following Saturdays. All that's on our website, olinfarms.com, O-L-L-I-N, farms with an S.com. Follow us on Facebook, on the socials. And just come out and get involved with the farm. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mark. And Azure, Yellow Barn?
Yeah. The best way to get in contact with us would be through email. And the email is info@yellowbarn.farm. And that is also our website, yellowbarn.farm.
Excellent. Thanks. And Marissa?
Thank you for this question. Easiest way to check out events, beef and pork shares, dar.eco. That's our website. And then you can email us with any questions at info@dar.eco. And I just feel so honored to have been here today. And I'm wishing you all a really beautiful day where you can see the brilliance of creation.
Fantastic. Rosana, gracias para todo.
Gracias a sí. ustedes. What a beautiful conversation here at the kitchen table. We have co-host with Chef Asher this morning. I'm Rosanna Longobetter, and I have been here in a beautiful conversation with Marisa Pulanski with Elk Run and Drylands Agroecology Research, Asrey Wyckoff with Yellow Barn Farm, Regenerative Farming, and also with Mark Gottrich with All In Farms, a family regenerative agriculture farm. What a wonderful kitchen table
Unbelievable.
This morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a beautiful day.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I fix your favorite dishes, hoping this good food fills you.